This ship burial contains treasures, items, materials, jewels, household implements, musical instruments, coins, spoons, bowls, a wide array of things from the Celtic world, from Scandinavia, from the Frankish world, from the Mediterranean, indeed from far off Byzantium, which suggests something to us about the very widespread and far-flung connections of the early Anglo-Saxons. So there is a potentially successful and effective political tradition emerging in the British Isles in the post-Roman period. More important in this early period, at any rate, are the Franks. Now, the Franks are another of these confederations of peoples. We talked in more detail about the Visigoths on an earlier day. We could go through some of the same kinds of discussions here. In other words, you know that not every Frank was a Frank. In other words, that it isn't clear that the Franks are a sort of a distinct biological group. It's a confederation of peoples whom the Romans first encountered living along the Rhine in the 250s AD. At least that's when the Frankish name first emerges for us in our sources. Rome made treaties with them. Rome fought wars with them. Rome dealt with them in a wide variety of ways over quite a long period of time. And slowly but surely, the Franks began to play a very important role in the history of Gaul. The Franks began moving from the Rhineland towards the south by slow agricultural expansion at first, moving across what we would call southern Holland, across what we would call Belgium, and on into the north of what we would call France. But it's important to say that this earliest Frankish expansion was not military, though occasionally it was attended by some violence. But fundamentally, it wasn't military. Fundamentally, it was just an agricultural expansion towards the south into very fertile territories. Now, the Franks began gradually, particularly after the absence of effective Roman control in Gaul, to expand against their neighbors. We've mentioned a couple of times already that in 507, they defeated the Visigoths, drove them eventually over the Pyrenees and into Spain. The Franks moved against the Burgundians, those people who had evoked in the time of Aetius a first coalition of Germanic peoples in Gaul fighting as Romani, fighting as Romans. Well, the Franks swallowed the Burgundians. The Franks also began expanding eastward across the Rhine, back into what we would think of today as Germany. Now, just as our early kingdoms that all vanished had strikes against them, the Franks, in a sense, had little credit in the bank. The Franks blended very early with the Gallo-Romans, the population of Gaul, especially through intermarriage. There were no racial or ethnic antipathies, and the Franks began to intermarry. Now, it's important to say, the Franks might have been 5% of the population of Gaul. So they were a conquering minority. They were a ruling minority. They were never a majority of the population. So intermarriage, of course, meant that there was the great likelihood that the Franks would vanish in a kind of a marital soup of other peoples. The Franks converted directly from paganism to Catholicism. At least that's the way the story was always remembered by the Franks. There does appear to have been a brief moment when at least some of the Franks' leaders flirted with Arianism, not least because some of the other key Germanic peoples around Western Europe, Theodoric, for instance, in Italy, were themselves Arians. But gradually, the Franks converted directly to Catholicism. So whereas Arianism was a strike against others, Catholicism was a plus for the Franks. From the late 5th century, the Frankish leaders began allying with leading churchmen, great abbots of monasteries and great bishops. This hooked them up with the late Roman intelligentsia, it hooked them up with the leading social classes, and of course it hooked them up with the leaders of the Catholic faith, which they themselves had embraced. So again, as there were strikes against some other people on those very grounds, the Franks managed to make capital out of their connections with the church. Now, the Franks maintained in lots of ways the traditional Roman order of things. Their official language was still Latin. They would have spoken Frankish, a Germanic dialect, but their official language was Latin. We see that, for example, things like wills continued to be kept and registered in Latin. We see that laws continued to be issued in Latin. As with the Anglo-Saxons, we see coins being issued in the names of the king. We see courts of law being held. In other words, all of the trappings of provincial life of the Roman world appear to persist, perhaps on a lesser scale, but they're still there. Now, Clovis, who reigned from 486 until 511, was the greatest of the Merovingian kings. The Merovingians were the family of which Clovis was the greatest member. When he died in 511, he divided his kingdom among his sons. And usually after this, for the next couple of centuries, There was not a single Frankish kingdom, but usually three: Austrasia in the northeast, Neustria in the northwest, and Burgundy in the southeast.